The 20th Chinese Communist Party Congress will be getting underway this weekend in Beijing, where leaders in that country will discuss China's direction for the next few years. With me via Skype for our weekly look at some of the key global stories in the coming days is the BBC's Jonathan Frewin. And Jonathan, what's likely to emerge from that gathering?
Well, the Chinese Communist Party Congress these days takes place every 5 years. At the last one in 2017, Xi Jinping, the president, broke with tradition by not revealing who his likely successor might be. At the next National People's Congress the following March, the constitution was amended to lift the two-term limit on the Chinese president. So this weekend's gathering is likely to be a rubber stamping of Xi Jinping as party general secretary and therefore national leader for the next 5 years. And in theory, there's nothing to stop him from serving as president for life. And in the last few months, there have been some high-profile prosecutions of senior Chinese officials on corruption charges, which some analysts have attributed to President Xi perhaps consolidating a bit of power. Now, it looks as though the man who's been steering China's economy of late, Premier Li Keqiang, is set to step down at next March's parliamentary meeting. And if that happens, the next round of senior party figures to be unveiled at the Communist Party Congress would likely indicate who would be in the running to replace him. I checked in with our China media analyst, Kerry Allen, who says that in the build-up to the Communist Party Congress, there have been a lot of media campaigns on how this has been an incredible decade for China. So the stage appears to be being set to demonstrate that Xi Jinping has improved the lives of Chinese citizens.
And Jonathan, the Congress also offers an opportunity to sort of look back at how things have changed in China under Xi Jinping's rule thus far. Can you sort of talk us through some of those changes?
Yeah, well, following on from what I was just saying there, there are some significant achievements in Xi's first 10 years in power. According to the World Bank, 82 million Chinese lived under conditions of extreme poverty in the year after he became leader. By 2019, that figure had fallen to 6 million, and China claims to have eradicated it completely since. Chinese government statistics indicate that the average disposable income for urban households rose by two-thirds between 2013 and 2020, with a more than 80% rise among rural households. The thing is, though, there are significant economic challenges ahead. Xi Jinping has been pursuing a very strict zero COVID strategy since the start of the pandemic, which means that whole areas get locked down on a frequent basis. And there are signs on social media of real fatigue among ordinary Chinese citizens, although much of that gets quickly blocked by the authorities. The COVID policy has also put a lid on Chinese economic growth, expected to be just around 2.8% this year, down from 8.1% in 2021. And the country faces a really challenging property sector. There's been a significant debt-fueled property boom in many parts of the country, and China's property sector accounts for around a third of overall economic output. But property prices are falling fast. Developers have been abandoning projects unfinished, and in some parts of the country, disgruntled homeowners have taken out loans to buy unfinished properties have stopped paying their mortgages. And then, perhaps more significantly, there's been a wider crackdown on dissent in the country, particularly in Hong Kong. Surveillance cameras are commonplace in the country, and there's the situation in Xinjiang, where there are accusations from the US and others that China is committing crimes against humanity and potentially even a genocide against the Uyghur Muslims there, though China obviously strongly refutes that. And there's also the potential for some sort of conflict over Taiwan. Xi Jinping has made very clear that he considers the self-governing island to be part of China and that reunification, quote, must be fulfilled. So in the coming years, there is the scope for a major dispute with the West if China were to, say, invade Taiwan. And that would obviously leave the rest of the world with a real dilemma about how to proceed.
Right. All right. So that gathering will be getting underway this weekend. Throughout this week, we've got the annual meetings of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund in Washington. What are we likely to see coming out of those meetings?
Well, those international financial institutions gather in the spring and fall each year. Finance ministers, central bankers, and business people get together to discuss the state of the global economy. This is the first time the meeting's been in person since the start of the pandemic. One of the centerpieces is the unveiling of a new global economic outlook. It perhaps comes as no surprise, given the wider economic context, that the IMF has already said it will be downgrading its forecast for global growth next year at the meeting this week. It reckons countries accounting for around a third of the global economy will see two quarters of contraction, commonly seen as a definition of a recession this year or next. High on the agenda will be how the world responds to the shocks of the COVID pandemic, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and a worsening climate crisis around the world. I mean, it's worth remembering that for the last few years, we've had a period of relative calm with low inflation and low interest rates. But with inflation now widespread and interest rates rising sharply in many parts of the world, the significant debts that countries and companies have built up are at risk of causing real problems. In the Financial Times today, there's an interview with US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen ahead of these annual meetings, and she discusses coming up with collective action around trying to put a price cap on Russian oil and also urging European countries countries to get aid money they've pledged to Ukraine into the country more swiftly. So overall, policymakers this week will be trying to work out the best way for their countries to respond and tackle the situation that's emerged, in particular since the start of this year when Russia invaded Ukraine and the picture for rising prices around the world dramatically worsened. It is worth noting here one piece of encouraging news on prices, though, which is that last Friday, the UN clocked up its sixth consecutive month of wholesale food price falls after a steep ramping up in the immediate aftermath of the Ukraine invasion. Vegetable oil, meat and dairy have all become cheaper, although grains have been rising again somewhat on world markets.
All right, Jonathan, finally, let's turn to Japan now, where tomorrow that country's government will be relaxing entry rules for tourists. What's that all about?
Yes, Japan's been something of an outlier in the aftermath of the COVID pandemic. Its borders were effectively closed to international tourists until June of this year, when the country began to allow visitors again, though only as part of an organized tour group and with strict quotas in place. Self-guided tours were permitted last month, and from Tuesday, restrictions on tourists are set to be lifted further. So Japan's Prime Minister Fumio Kishida has said that the new rules mean that Japan will be on a par with the United States for visitors. Travelers from a range of countries will be able to visit visa-free with no quotas on arrivals. Now, the Japanese yen has weakened substantially against the US dollar over recent months, so the country is likely to be attractive as a quite cheap destination for many prospective tourists. It had seen a record 32 million visitors back in 2019, just prior to the pandemic. However, Japan's not likely to hit those sorts of figures anytime soon. A significant proportion of tourists to the country were coming from China, and with strict quarantine still in place for people to return to the Chinese mainland, analysts say it's not likely that those visitors are returning in the near future. In the wider region, Hong Kong has already recently taken steps to end its COVID hotel quarantine period, but there are signs that the territory is worried about how it's going to attract visitors again. Just last week, it announced that it would be giving away 500,000 free flights at a cost of around $250 million as it tries to boost its COVID-hit tourism industry.
All right, that is the BBC's Jonathan Frewin in London. Jonathan, nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Nice to talk to you too. Thanks for having me.